and welcome to The Dorothy Project. My name's Alice, and I'm on a mission to meet other women like me who live in a gay man's world. This week, I'm talking to Amy Zing. Amy co-founded the queer clubbing collective Sink the Pink about 10 years ago with her best mate, Glim Fussell, to give them somewhere they could dress up, party, and feel at home together. It's since become one of the biggest club brands in the country and spawned offshoots including London's pop music festival, Mighty Hoopla. After moving from London to Margate, Amy founded Margate Pride, which is this weekend, as well as the youth group Out Margate. She also had a baby. Oh, and one other thing I should mention, I interviewed Amy as she was setting up for the club night Savage, which hopefully explains the random chatting, music and clonking that you can sometimes hear in the background. What can I say? It's authentic. So Sink the Pink, define Sink the Pink for people who may not have experienced it.
Oh, well,
before.
They're very welcome, all of them. It's just started as a fun, silly party, but I suppose it's become a movement or a clubbing collective, queer collective of drag queens, of performers. It wasn't initially a drag thing. It was just a party, a dressing up party,
yeah.
A place for everyone to come and feel themselves. We always wanted everyone to feel welcome. It was basically two best friends wanting an excuse to show off.
Yeah.
So yeah, we found a venue and we started running monthly parties, and then they grew and grew. They always had a different theme. And now, yeah, we do quite big venues like Troxy and Brixton Academy, and we have a festival called Hoopla, and we have where we are tonight, Savage at Metropolis, which is on its last legs at the moment. Well, it's in this venue on its last legs. It's going to go on to huge things. It's sort of lots of amazing arms have grown from the Sink the Pink roots, so I'm super proud.
Yeah, I bet. And what was the original like? What was the reason? Was there a spark that made you think we need to fill a gap here? Or
well, we felt it was missing, really. It was that need of what we didn't find our place in London, sort of thing. We would go out in Soho and find ourselves in, I don't know, quite what felt like quite backwards situations for what we felt were quite a progressive time. That's in like gay, typically gay establishments. And then we would have, like, for Glyn to go and pull a boy, we'd have to go to them. And then for me to pull a boy, we'd have to go to straight spaces. And then we'd be like, this is a bit weird, isn't it? Because there's loads of girls and gays that are best friends. So wouldn't it be nice to create a space where we can all just snog anyone? And yeah. Not just being about that, you know, just being about, actually, I'm just going to go out with my best friends and have fun. And that energy of all your best mates and all the silly songs that you, like, maybe you would normally just keep for home, but we play them in the club.
The thing I love is, like, everyone admiring everyone else's looks.
Yeah, and it's a real admiration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gives
really
it such a
that.
Nice atmosphere at me, because it means you speak to people, right?
That's what bonds you. Thank you, because that's one of my... I'm really happy that lives on. It's really weird when you've been doing something for now 11 years, because the initial energy is exactly that, like... I remember the early days, we had these like temporary tattoos made, just like Sink the Pink with the original logo that had an anchor on it. And I remember someone saying that they had one on them the next day, and someone just got chatting to them at a cash point, because they were like, oh, you were at Sink the Pink too. And it was like a reason, it was like, you know, taking it out of the club space, a reason to sort of rebond. So yeah, I'm really super proud of that. Thank you.
And all of these, like you said, these amazing, it's like an octopus of like all these different side projects. Like, how did they each come about? Have like different, because it's a huge collective, right? There's so many people involved.
Yeah. I suppose just naturally, really. Everything we've done, well, me and Glyn have always had this saying, nothing needs to be hard except willies, which is obviously ridiculous, but like actually there's a lot of truth to it, because if something doesn't feel right, or if it's like sticky and a challenge, then it's not a natural, you probably shouldn't roll with it, you know, like, so we'll just sit with stuff and go, you know, and check in with everyone, like, is everyone happy with this, let's talk it through, because, you know, ultimately we're providing a service for our queer community and our friends, and that's who it's for. So if people are like, do you know what, it would be really nice to have somewhere to go after Sink the Pink, or, you know, none of us are fitting in the working men's anymore, I remember there being 300, 400 people that couldn't get in working men's once, all dressed in wedding dresses or something. It's like, we need an after party.
In terms of how it's evolved, like, from, like, the working men's club to, like, obviously the balls now are, like, 35 quid a ticket. Like,
yes. Yeah.
Do you find, like, it feels like the crowd changes and kind of moves around? Have you kind of gone with that?
Yeah, no, inevitably there'll be a shift in a crowd if you've done anything for 10 years. because the friends, the early days, it was like our friends and then their friends. And then I remember the first time we went, oh, there's people here that we don't know. You know, it's like, so it's like, oh yeah, that's like Daniel's friend's friend. And then it became, you know, you don't actually know these people. And then 10, 11 years later, of course, you know, loads of amazing people around London or moving to London that are coming or getting on a mega bus from Glasgow. These guys all got in their drag on the way. So it's grown arms and legs in an audience sense as well. And of course that means it's not like the underground queer culture that it started as, because, well, that's why we have the other legs of what we do that still, I think, are dipping maybe more into that scene. But it's also really important to bring this to the mainstream. You know, Glyn's now on Radio 1 doing a podcast called Drag Queen's Den. That's really important, actually, groundbreaking, that that's on mainstream radio. And they're talking about rimming, another really important subject. But, you know, like bringing queer culture to the mainstream and normalising or usualising, I think is a more powerful word, what is going down, so that we can stop homophobia ultimately, you know, and make the world a better place and make really small-minded people more liberal. And, you know, there's power in doing what we're doing on a mainstream level as well as an underground level. And then with that brings, of course, more costs when you're doing bigger venues and you've got a massive stage show, you've got a massive set production team, who, by the way, are all members of our queer community. So we're like employing 70 amazing young queers to run these events. So it's a healthy cycle,
yeah,
and it's inevitable when you get to that stage, because I, you know, for me, I'm like the worst person to go on the door because I let everyone in for free, and I, you know, start prides and youth groups for, you know, because I've got a terrible brain with money. But, you know, we work with a really good team who've worked out how to do this sustainably and ethically and beautifully, I believe.
Tell me about the first time you found yourself, like, in a queer space, in a gay bar. Do you remember?
So, well, growing up, my cousin, who's actually the child of Winnie, who gave me my drag name, Jacob Love, who's doing polls here tonight, he came out when we were kids. Well, before he even, like, came out, you know, we were, like, people would say, look at those two pretty girls, and he'd have, mum would let him have long hair, and so, you know, it didn't take long until we all went, ah, my, you know, our cousin is a lovely gay boy. And so that experience probably was, I think, him coming out when he was at college. He officially came out in this really cute way where he rang me and said, oh, I've got a boyfriend now. It's like, I know, but it's really nice that you felt you should call me and come out. And so I went and stayed with him at college, and we went to the local gay bar, and it was, you know, a classic small town gay bar. But I remember being in that space with him and just being so proud of him because that was his space. And, you know, actually completely discrediting what I said before about not finding ourselves comfortable in Soho. There's such an important place for traditional gay bars. For example, I live in Margate and there's like a small town gay bar called Sundowners, and it really is an important place. Oh yeah, and just dancing on the dance floor. I remember them playing We Are Family and the boom, we're here with my cousin. And it's like, we're family, not, you know, on literally on a level, but everything I do basically is because of Jacob. He's my best friend. We were like in the womb at the same time. Our mums are a year apart. And everyone has a Jacob. Like every girl that hangs out with their gay best friend, not only is he my best friend, but he's my cousin. And everything I do is for that someone else's Jacob, you know? And the same with Glyn, you know, he's become that too to me, you know, super, super close. You know, I have like an army of gay best friends, but I think Jacob is my rock, and we call each other leg. It's like if we'd lose a leg if we didn't have each other.
What do you think, because this is one of the things I'm really interested in, basically, like, what is, like, what makes that relationship special? Like, I don't know how you, like, would you define yourself as straight or as queer?
I don't know, a bit bi or open or poly or like everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. Labels are weird, aren't they? I think we've always thought that with Sync the Pink to be like labelless, which is like a label in itself. But to, you know, to definitely on our branding and promotion stuff, not to be like, you know, a bit bossy, or because some stuff can feel a bit almost school, like you can be this, but you can't be this, or we're going to do this and you have to be this. And it's like, no, it's a really, like, we put the front line of silliness, like silly queer fun, you know. You know what you're getting by, well, first of all, word of mouth is the most powerful tool, isn't it? So the word of mouth is that this is a great fun party to go to. Everyone can be themselves. You'll see crazy shit going down on the stage. So And I think that trickles down from the stage. So there's this wild costume on the stage. Maybe a member of the audience next time will be like, oh, I could wear heels, or I could put more than just a tiny bit of glitter on my face. I could like cover myself in blue paint or whatever. So there's that sort of, yeah, that inspiration of finding yourself within the space without there needing to be a label.
One of the things I found really interesting, but also really depressing, is the number of women who say, especially when it's like straight women, and you say, why did you end up going to gay bars and being in this world? And they just said, we didn't feel safe in straight bars.
Yeah, yeah.
But then that's interesting as well, because like you're entering, in some cases, someone else's safe space.
Yeah.
And like, how do you think that kind of plays out?
Yeah, you have to test the water. And I've been in places where it says on the door, no fat hags. And I actually respect that, you know. I've had selfies with next to the sign, like, you know, but I think it's really important to feel your surroundings and know, like, is this for me? Am I welcome here? I remember being in East Block at 5 a.m. thinking, oh, I don't think I'm needed anymore. Like, not, you know, it's just having a nice time, but looking around and going, this is just men snogging each other. I actually remember there's a photo of me knitting in East Block because everyone else was snogging boys, and I was like, well, because we all live together, so I was like, well, we're all going to get a taxi together in half an hour, so I may as well just finish my knitting. Yeah, there's someone took a photo of me. It's this like, quite like comedy / iconic photo of me just sat in East Block finishing my knitting in drag.
That's amazing.
But yeah, because of realizing that at that point it really wasn't the space for me. Not that I was made to feel unwelcome. Like, I think especially like, you know, old school ones like us who've been in gay clubs forever just go, oh yeah, that's just Amy. But I am aware of that kind of like screamy hen party situation arriving in a gay space and ruining it, to be honest, you know. So I think as a woman, we must be aware of and respectful of the safe space that we are being welcomed into, and treat it with the same respect that it deserves, you know. We're fucking lucky to even be here, because it's, you know, queer parties are the best parties. I think what I want Sink the Pink to be is actually to feel like a massive hen party that's got loads of gays at it, because that's kind of how it always was anyway. But something like Savage, you know, and Hoopla more in that first bracket. But yeah, and something like Savage to feel slightly more underground still. And actually maybe you wouldn't come here with loads of hens. Like, I don't know, just suddenly loads of L plates wouldn't feel right. And it's really important that you're aware of that. Because, you know, the door bitch will call you out otherwise. That's the thing. Yeah. What's great is the drag queen will call you out. If you're there with 20 girls and they know it's not for you, you'll be told not to come in.
Well, you're talking about the, like, the fag hag sign. Like, what do you think of that term?
Oh, you know, I have no, limits. So I don't, you know, to the point where I, you know, sometimes just have to tell myself to just not say things. Because I'm kind of old school in that sense. But I appreciate that the word fag can be offensive to some people. But, you know, I kind of am from the old Johnny Roo lot where you just said anything. But I am aware and really respectful of the fact that if someone said to me, I find the word fag or faggot offensive, I'd be like, of course, then I won't align myself as the hag to that fag. But if you're not overanalyzing it and you're taking it from its old school campy loo roots, it's just a funny rhyming word for a girl hanging around with a gay man. I don't actually really use it. I did, in fact, used to keep a blogspot.com that was called The Diary of a London Fag Hag. I took it offline because it's so embarrassing now. But yeah, so I think back then maybe a lot of things didn't feel offensive back then. Are you offended by it? How do you feel about it?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
And I don't like it because of both parts.
Because the word hag is very nice either. Yeah, no, it's true.
But the trouble is, there's kind of like, it was interesting when I was talking to Fanny Minka, and I was like, what else do you say? And she was very much just like, I just don't think these things will become relevant. And her vibe was that everything's just becoming so much more fluid that you're just in a queer space and you're a queer person.
Yeah. That's true. I feel like back then it did used to be a bit like, oh, but what are you? What do you? You know, it's almost like what you have to write in your grinder or whatever. It's like, I'm this and I do this and she's this. And it's like, well, yeah, Fanny's totally right. You don't need labels for things. It's just silly old school terms. I'm quite interested in all the old language and Polari and stuff. So it's kind of you know, it's evolutionary. Things evolve, yeah. And it's an interesting time, isn't it, for language?
And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about was having a baby. Like,
yes,
how does that work with like working in like nightlife? And
it's like production management on a whole other level. So I suppose, you know, years of looking after drag queens is similar to having a baby in a weird way, like cleaning up shit, literally, you know, cleaning up sick, not sleeping. There are many parallels, birthing things, growing something and birthing it, you know, so it's completely wild and mad. My friend Livy, who is Maurice of Bourgeois Maurice, was doing it at the same time, fortunately. So I had a queer ally from our scene. We were literally a couple of months, you know, in sync with birthing. So I was so grateful to have her, because, in fact, you should probably speak to her as well. She's just like a really good friend and sister, and now a mum too. So I think we were able to, you know, send each other books about queer theory and motherhood, and, you know, just to know that our lives aren't going to be so different that we become this unrecognizable heteronorm, because I don't want that, and I'm not that, but I also hormonally and my soul wanted to make a human, like every ounce of my like core and like juicy vaginal fluids wanted to make a human. You know, when it's like you get your period and then you get to the like the juicy bit half a month later and you're like, ah, I need semen.
Was that, I mean, something it was that primal. Had like changed? Did like, do you know what I mean? Had, or is it something Maybe. You've always wanted?
Fuck no, no, no. I was really not anti kids, but I was like, ooh, you know, who does that? And, you know, classic girl in her 20s, like being in London, being a sassy bitch. Having, you know, working full time, doing 14-hour days in radio, and then doing like millions of hours in clubs, and then, you know, I was just doing crazy hours in everything I did, giving it 1,000,000%, and never even imagining that side. But this super like overwhelming desire came about, and I felt like my legacy was at a stage of doing beautiful things that I finally looked inwards and went, what do you need? And it was like, I need to make a human, and I need to do the most brilliant job at doing that next, and I'll do that for as long as I have to do that like entirely, and then when he can start, or I always felt like it would be a boy weirdly, but yeah, when he can start being you know, able to be with others, then I can start dipping my toe back into the other babies that I'd originally created. But it's an all-consuming, life-changing, mind-blowing experience. The birthing experience is the best, craziest thing I've ever done. I was in a pool just having what felt like a drug experience, but I didn't take any of the, not even gas and air or any drugs. I just like full out had a ecstasy experience, I can describe it as, in terms of the beauty and like the worst hellish pain of my life. But equally, when you breathe it out, it's like the highest high you'll ever feel. And it's so primal. Like it's, and I, birthed on what I could only describe as a rimming stool, which is like this thing called a birthing stool, which is just like kind of low potty, and which even at my like craziest birthing, I was like, ha ha ha, this is like a rimming stool. I don't even know why I know about a rimming stool, because my cousin's a filth bag.
But that's the thing, isn't it? You pick up all this information.
These are like comedy references.
Yeah.
It's true, and there's only certain other women that you can share those lols with.
Yeah.
There's a girl called Kirsty McKenzie, who I fucking adore. She DJs here sometimes. She's moved to Margate too, and we did a night. I do a night there as well called Cockles and Muscles, which is like a sort of campy Sing the Pink type night down there. And me and her, you know, we were ladies of a certain age, and she had like this fabulous look, and she like had this leotard on. She was like, "Don't you find as a woman you get to an age where you have to tuck?" Which I thought was so funny, because this is what I certainly do after birthing, for fuck's sake. But like, she's like, "Yeah, I've got a couple of hold your in pants on, and then these really tight." Tights and then a leotard. So that's so funny, like I don't know. Just the idea of a woman tucking is just hilarious. Yeah. But like that probably wouldn't be as funny to like someone who's not from our scene.
Yeah.
But her saying that was, you know, it stayed still tickles me how funny it is.
Sometimes, like you said, you feel like a missionary sometimes. Sometimes I feel like an ambassador, like the diplomatic service.
And people look to you for advice. Like, so Amy, like, you know, what's your advice as like a gay man? And I'm just like, what? But I do feel completely aligned in so many ways. But then, like you say, the birthing thing, that is a new experience. But I've taken these guys on that journey with me too, so it works both ways. And I think a lot of my friends have... We're all learning about ourselves via that. Because really, it taps you back into your own childhood. And goodness, God, that's how we all started. And that's, how, you know, how I can make this kid's life as brilliant as I possibly can. Of course he'll end up like Safi, you know, because I'm going to be like taking him to festivals and making him super like gender neutral and fabulous. And then it's like, oh, okay, he just wants to be an accountant that loves football. But I'll do what I can.
I love, you know, Celine Dion's got a gender neutral kids rage. Yeah. I was like, amazing.
Of course she does.
What a brand extension.
Yeah, she's the best.
But yeah, I think I saw a picture on Insta of you like breastfeeding backstage at like Sync the Pink. And I was just like, for me, that was like, I had never seen that image. And I was like, maybe there is a way of keeping those bits of your life that you love.
There is a way. Well, the way is to just be as true to you as possible. And the rest will follow. Free your mind and the rest will follow. You know, it's difficult, it's not easy, and the two don't go hand in hand. Like there's this where we're sat in this dingy club right now is not a place for a baby. So, but 2 hours ago I was breastfeeding. So it's like, you just production manage every element of your life well enough and you do make it. Look at Annie Mac. I mean, there's women that I look up to in so many ways. I mean, she interviewed us recently. I'm just so lucky, I'm so proud and lucky to be aligned with amazing, inspiring women that have made me go, do you know what, it'll be okay, we'll work it out. We've got each other's backs. Us and our gay best friends have each other's backs in a way that the straight men will never have or never understand. I think that's the difference, is that they're girls and we're gay men. We're the same, is what I'm saying. They get us, we get them, you know. There's a part of them that is us, and there's a part of us that is them. It's so intrinsically linked that it's beyond words, you know.
In terms of, like...
Everything.
Place in the world or...
Everything. Lived experience, like, the way that... The place in the world, maybe being, like, societally different to the, you know, the hetero male will always, sadly, think that they're the one... running things, but we know they're not. Feeling safe in the street, feeling safe in the club, feeling that you can really connect with, I can't connect with anyone like I can with my girls and gays. Like it's just different on so many levels. Of course that would be different for some straight women, so it's a different thing, but like personally, and I think that's probably why defining as queer feels more comfortable.
Amazing. And then my final question is, who else should I speak to?
So yeah, definitely Livy of Bourgeois Maurice fame. Definitely Jade Adams, Bristolian goddess. I'll link you up with them both. I feel because they're like my kind of bestie girls in the gay scene kind of thing. Well, and in life. This is the thing
well,
about
they like overlap, right?
Yeah, overlap. Yeah, we're like proper old school. Oh, well, also my friend Susan would be really interesting. So we used to do radio together and we're still besties and she's... Her brother is Kelly from Block Party, and she's a kind of a lifelong friend of the gays. But also, yeah, she's just done some really interesting things, and we, you know, she's an early Sync the Pinker. She'd just be a really interesting person for you to talk to, I think. So yeah, that's three that I would immediately say. But actually, I could probably list you like a million. But start with them.
That photo of Amy breastfeeding backstage at Sync the Pink had a massive impact on me. When I saw it, it was the first time I'd considered that it might be possible to combine motherhood with queer nightlife, and that women like me and Amy aren't at the mercy of a binary choice there. Next week, it's time for a Dorothy Project first as I speak to my first male interviewee. Andrew Lumsden is a pioneering activist who was a key part of the UK Gay Liberation Front back in the 70s. He told me about his Gay Liberation Front comrade, Mary McIntosh. Mary was an academic as well as an activist, and her contribution to British gay men's rights is simply staggering. In 1968, she published a paper arguing that homosexuality is not a psychiatric nor a medical condition, based on a survey that she conducted of gay men in Leicester and London. In her time on the Criminal Law Revision Committee, she advocated for the lowering of the age of consent for gay men. And she also studied the letters of gay prisoners from the 16th century onwards and identified the 18th century gay subculture of mollies. What a legacy. I can't wait for you to hear about her. See you next week.